I've flown on enough planes to know that it's really convenient to step into that metal tube and get out in London or get in, out in Miami. But there's also a lot of frustration on airplanes, too, things we deal with that are annoying and uncomfortable about flying. And the number one thing that people talk about as that makes them nervous or afraid or worried on an airplane is turbulence. Have you ever been on a plane that encountered turbulence? Yeah. Encountered is the pilot's word, though, right? That's not the word we use. When I've been on planes that have encountered turbulence, up and down, side to side, hold on to your drinks and your small children type of turbulence that makes you sick, I don't get off that plane and say, oh, we encountered some turbulence. I say, we hit turbulence. I curl up in a ball with my head on Christina's lap, and I say, I thought I was going to die because we hit such horrible turbulence. Because for us, it's hitting turbulence. It's like we're hitting clouds made of rock, and it is scary. It's not, oh, pardon me, I encountered some turbulence. No, it's scary. I read a story from Forbes magazine about a businessman who travels all the time, and he was on a plane that encountered or hit some clear air turbulence. How many of you know what clear air turbulence is? That's when your plane suddenly drops several hundred feet, straight down, like it just hits a pocket of no resistance and boom. And so their plane hit clear air turbulence, dropped several hundred feet, and then leveled off, and then dropped several hundred feet again, and then leveled off. And then it happened multiple times, and he's flown, but he was scared. Tears were filling his eyes. He was holding on to the armrests. He was sweating, and because he knew this is not good, right? The plane shouldn't do this. He looked out the wing, at the wings, and saw that they were like moving and twisting like they were doing yoga, he said, and this wasn't right. And then he feels this hand grab his hand, and he looks, and it's the 15-year-old teenage girl sitting next to him, and she says, are you okay, mister? We're going to be okay. Don't worry. And now he's not only scared and he's ashamed and embarrassed and he's angry too because he's like stupid teenage girls, always afraid when they don't need to be. But then when they should be freaking out, they're like, oh, it's okay. The most common number one thing that makes people freak out on airplanes is turbulence. But I was reading an article about a pilot who flies the big planes, the 767s and things like that. And he was saying that 99.99% of the time, turbulence is really no big deal. Even when it's dropping like that, it's not dangerous. It's uncomfortable. And when I'm bouncing on around on a plane like warm jello and looking for a parachute or fighting the impulse to run up and try and get into the cabin and make sure the pilot's still alive, otherwise, you know, why is this happening? In my mind, what I'm picturing is pilots up there, white-knuckled, gripping that wheel, steering like crazy to avoid all the clouds that are trying to attack us, stepping on the brake, yelling to like throw the cargo out of the plane. That's what I'm picturing. I'm picturing the co-pilot saying, mayday, mayday, we're all going to die. Just don't tell the people in the back. That's what I'm picturing when it's really bad and I'm nervous about it. And what he said is, in fact, what the pilots are probably doing is just sitting there sipping their orange juice because they know it's no big deal. They're more bothered by the pulp in their orange juice than by the turbulence that's freaking everyone else out. Why is that? Why would that be? Is they used to it? Because they know. They have perspective that's different than ours. There's something they know that the passengers don't know. There's something they can see that the passengers can't see. My view as a scared passenger is much different than the view of a trained and experienced pilot. My view, looking through that little porthole of a plastic window, is so much different than their view, looking through the windshield and all their instruments. The lens you see through changes everything about what you see. And that changes the way you respond. The lenses we look at life through change what we see, and that changes how we respond to life and its turbulences. The lenses we look through can make us overreact, like the scared businessman, or underreact, like that confident teenager, or they can give us a vision of the truth so that we react appropriately to the turbulences of life. The truth is, So many of us are living out bad reactions because we're seeing life's turbulences through bad lenses. That's what happened to Onesimus, the runaway slave we started talking about last week. And we read through the letter that Paul wrote on his behalf as he sent him back to the master he stole from and ran away from. We told Onesimus' story about how he ran away in order to get freedom and to avoid the consequences for what he'd done. So let me just remind you the important parts. Onesimus was a slave in a Roman city called Colossae, which means he was probably born as a slave because his name means useful. And the way slavery was viewed in Rome, people were slaves because they were inferior. And so those who were slaves were considered to be inferior class. The best they could aspire to was to be useful. And so he was given this name, which means useful. And he looked at his situation, and he wanted to be free. And the only way to be free from what he could see at the time was to run away and escape. So he stole what I'm guessing is probably a lot of money, enough to start a new life as he ran up to Ephesus, the next biggest city he could find. And he left his master Philemon in the dust. What lens do you think Onesimus was looking through when he did that? It's probably the same lens that you and I and most people view life through. That the ability to do what we want to do is ultimate freedom. That's the lens most people view life through. And they think it's worth fighting for and chasing and running after. The ability to just do whatever you have to do whatever you want to do, to choose for yourself, to self-determine. That is a lens most people view life through. Think about how many times this past week you felt like running away from your kids, from your parents, from your spouse, your boss, your job. Because all those things, what are they doing? They're getting in the way of you and I doing what we want to do. I want to go buy this. My wife's getting in the way of me wanting to go buy this. I want to have peace and quiet. My kids are evil and don't let me. My parents, I want to go do this. My parents are like, no, you can't do anything. We want to do what? We want to run away to get to this place we imagine where we are free. We have ultimate freedom to do what we want to do because that's what freedom is, right? To do whatever I want to do. We run for freedom and we run from consequences. And everyone who sees life this way, through this lens that freedom is doing what I want to do, they end up running. Running, 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 running. We end up running away from accountability, away from consequences of the past, running towards some future where we can just do what we want. Onesimus ran. He ran to Ephesus, that near big city, his pockets full of the money he'd stolen. He ran to find freedom. And along the way, he encountered Jesus. He crashed into Jesus, and it smashed the lenses he was looking at life through. It totally destroyed them and replaced them with the gospel. He met Paul, the apostle, and learned from Paul about the gospel, and the gospel became the new lens that he started to look at life through, and it replaced all of the scared passenger, fearful perspective, and gave him the pilot's perspective of life. The big picture, the high up view of everything. And it changed the way he looked at his life and his situation. Let me just read a small part of this small letter just to remind you of the two things we want to focus on today about how the gospel changed the way Onesimus saw life. Starting in verse 9, the second part of it, 9b of Philemon. It's up here on the screen. Part of it's in your bulletin. It's also in the app if you're following along taking notes. But Philemon, it's only one chapter, verse 9, the second half, it says, "It is as none other than Paul, an old man and now also a prisoner of Christ Jesus, that I appeal to you for my son Onesimus, who became my son while I was in chains. Formerly, he was useless to you, but now he's become useful both to you and to me." See what he did there? Verse 12, "I am sending him who is my very heart back to you. I would have liked to keep him with me so that he could take your place in helping me while I'm in chains for the gospel. But I did not want to do anything without your consent, so that any favor you do would not seem forced, but be voluntary. Perhaps the reason he was separated from you for a little while was that you might have him back forever, no longer as a slave, but better than as a slave, as a dear brother. He is very dear to me, but even dearer to you, both as a fellow man and as a brother in the Lord. So when Onesimus put on the gospel lenses to look at his situation, the first thing he saw was that freedom is not a destination to run to, but a gift to receive. Freedom is not a destination to run to, but a gift to receive. Why did he run away? He ran away to be free from having to be a servant, to be free from having to do whatever Philemon wanted him to do and do his own thing instead. That's why he ran away. It reminds me of Jesus' parable, the prodigal son. Remember that parable Jesus told? Who told his father, you know, pretty much, I wish you were dead. And so he blew up his relationship with his father, took his inheritance, ran off, blew up his inheritance having fun because he was looking through that same lens that Onesimus was looking through, that you and I often look through, this idea that the freedom to do what I want, that's ultimate freedom. Where did he wind up? Anyone remember where the prodigal son winded up? Trying to figure out a way to steal food from pigs. I don't know if the same exact thing happened to Onesimus. How long was it before he realized that freedom is not a destination you run to? It's not a place you can arrive at, that it's actually a gift that you have to be given. Was it right away, or was it after all the money he'd stolen ran out and he still wasn't free? So much of our life is about trying to get free, and so much of that is about getting enough money or stuff in order to feel like we're free. Prodigal son learned it. Onesimus learned it. Didn't make him free. At some point, Onesimus encounters Jesus, and that lens that had him running after freedom and away from consequences gets smashed, and it gets replaced with the lens of the gospel. And what does he end up doing as a result? Did you pick it up? What did he end up doing as a result? Serving Paul. He ended up serving Paul. Paul says, now he is so useful to me. I want to keep him here helping me, but I'm going to send him back to you so you can set him free to come and help me. What's he doing? He is now, Paul is in prison. He's in chains. That means no one's providing him food unless someone from outside comes and does it. That's the way prison worked there. No one is taking care of his clothes. No one's bringing him stuff to ride on unless someone chooses to serve him. Onesimus ran away from having to serve other people because he thought freedom was going to be doing whatever he wanted to do. He encounters Jesus, smashes that false lens of freedom, and now he is willingly serving Paul, bringing him what he needs, taking care of him. The gospel completely changed his view of freedom, didn't it? When Onesimus put on the gospel lenses, he stopped believing that ultimate freedom was doing what he wanted to do and realized that ultimate freedom is doing what is right. I have a friend who's a pastor in Burlington. His name is Marvin Thomas. He says it this way: ultimate freedom requires ultimate surrender. Ultimate freedom is found in surrendering to God as the pilot, trusting him and working alongside him to help everyone else, keep them from jumping out of the plane, keeping people from running away at the slightest bit of turbulence. Not because we have some ignorant sense of calm, but because we have taken the perspective of the pilot and we're seeing things through the gospel. Ultimate freedom requires ultimate surrender. Cheryl Batchelder is the CEO of Popeye's Louisiana Chicken. Anybody ever eat Popeye's chicken? She's a committed Christian, and she turned her company around with a focus on serving others. And she also wrote a book called Dare to Serve, How to Drive Superior Results by Serving Others. And she did this interview recently, and she talked about servanthood, and this is what she said. She said, the Bible verse that I've written on my calendar every day, she has the same verse on her calendar, it's Philippians 2:3. She said, it's because I haven't found one that's more paramount to how I want to lead in my family and in my work. And the verse is, do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility, count others more than yourselves. And she said, I really like the choice of words around counting others more than yourselves because I believe we've all got this inner two-year-old inside of us. We'd really like to be just lying on the floor, kicking and screaming because we didn't get the candy bar we wanted. It's kind of hardwired in us to be self-absorbed little people. And we learn to fake it well, right? To pretend we're not the two-year-old, but inside that two-year-old's still kicking and screaming. And then she said, I find the biblical perspective really challenging in every aspect of my day. How I'm spending my time, the decisions I make, to put them through a filter or a lens of whether I'm thinking about myself or whether I'm thinking about others. Am I doing this because I'll get a bigger bonus check Or am I really thinking about the long-term interest of the company? Am I doing this truly for my franchise owners, or am I getting some personal benefit that I am not willing to acknowledge? These kinds of provocative self-mirror questions hold me, hold you, to a tighter standard. I always say servant leadership is an aspiration because you can never really claim you've arrived. Freedom is something Jesus gives you, and you know you've received it when you can surrender your will and serve. As long as you're running away to that place where you'll get to just do whatever you want to do, you'll never find freedom. It is not a place. Freedom is a gift that Jesus gives us. And you know you've got it when your heart is free to serve instead of bound up to being selfish. So that's the first way, putting on the gospel. Changed Onesimus' view. He was the epitome of you and me running away from having to serve so he could do his own thing. And then he encounters Jesus, and Jesus sets him free to serve. The second way is this. He saw that the consequences aren't something to escape, but consequences are something to embrace. Ooh, how many of you believe that to be true? Consequences aren't something to escape, but they are something to embrace. John Ortberg, I was reading something he had written about this. He told a story about a CEO who took over at a company, and on the last day, the other CEO was on his way out, and he was talking to him, and he said, look, I've put 3 envelopes in your new desk drawer to help you if you find yourself in a sticky situation. The first time you make a mistake, open envelope number 1. It'll help you avoid the consequences. The second time you make a mistake, open number 2, and it'll help you avoid the consequences. The third time, open number 3. You get it, right? Okay, so we have 3 envelopes in his desk. A week or 2 goes by, and this new CEO makes his first mistake. Goes to the drawer, takes out envelope number 1, rips it open, and it says, blame me. So he does. He blames the former CEO, says, this is something he did wrong. It messed up. I'm just trying to fix everything. And everyone says, okay, fine. We get it. Yeah, you're still new. You got to deal with his stuff. Fine. Another couple weeks go by, and he makes another mistake. So he runs to his desk, takes out the second envelope, rips it open, and it says, blame the board. He says, I can do that. He says, the board, they're not my board. They're the board that were here before. They don't, they're not working well. They're dysfunctional. They're his board. I got to work and get my own people in place, and then things will go better. And everyone, okay, we get it. We understand. Well, not too long goes by, and he makes a third mistake, and he runs to the drawer like, this is my last one, rips it open, and it says, prepare 3 envelopes. We want so much to get away from consequences, and we start throwing blame around at everybody to do it. The lenses we view life through tell us to avoid consequences for our mistakes and our failures. And Onesimus, he may have lived a couple thousand years ago, but he's not much different than you and me. Before he met Jesus, he had no intention of ever facing the consequences for what he did, running away and stealing. Because he knew those consequences would be death. They killed runaway slaves, just to make an example of them. How much more, what would they do to him for having stolen all that money and run away? He'd probably get tortured first, who knows? And so he had no intention of going back and facing the consequences until he met Jesus, and Jesus shattered those lenses and put on new lenses, and yet then now Onesimus goes back because something changed in his view. Consequences were now no longer something to avoid, but something he was ready to embrace as he's seeing through the gospel. And, we could sit here, and some of you may be sitting here thinking, he's totally justified for running away, right? Slavery is horrible. He is totally justified for running away. He's totally justified for stealing. This guy probably, the master had controlled his family, who knows, for generations maybe. He's totally justified to take some money, run away, because slavery is just unjust. But when Onesimus puts on the gospel lenses, he could no longer let the injustices he'd suffered justify the injustices he'd committed. The gospel gave him a clear, piercing, surgical vision. I don't know about you, but when I do something wrong, I tend to get really murky about the details and the facts and about what you really, what was I really supposed to have done? At home, it's like, all right, I was supposed to have cleaned the bathroom. Well, does that mean the tub too, really? Is that what you wanted? Or you just wanted the things people might use if they come over clean? You know how it gets murky? You tell your kids to do something, and it gets really murky. You're like, why didn't you do this? Oh, you wanted me to clean, like, the whole room. I thought you just wanted, like, that part done. Like, the details get murky. But then, if you do something wrong, the kids turn into the black and white police, right? I read a story the other day about a kid driving the car with his father. They get to a red light. The father stops, turns right through the light. You're allowed to do that, right? They get home. As soon as they walk through the door, this little kid walks up to the phone, dials 911. Daddy went through a red light. Right? That's, you know, we're black and white when someone else has done something wrong. As soon as we do something wrong, we get murky because the lenses we see life through is avoid consequences. But that's not what the gospel does in us. The gospel helped Onesimus see something we all struggle to see. It helped him to see where he was wrong. It helped him to not justify his error and justify his sin by the sin of others. His gospel vision sees everything through the lens of God's holiness. And when you see yourself through the lens of God's holiness, you can't ever justify yourself anymore. And that's important. Because justifying our actions is what kills and destroys relationships. Social psychologists Carol Tavris and Elliot Aronson, they wrote a book. I love the title of this book. It's called Mistakes Were Made, But Not By Me. In it, they describe how a fixation with our own righteousness and justifying ourselves can choke the life out of love. They wrote, "The vast majority of couples who drift apart do so slowly over time in a snowballing pattern of blame and self-justification. Each partner focuses on what the other one is doing wrong while justifying his or her own preferences, attitudes, and ways of doing things. From our standpoint, misunderstandings, conflicts, personality differences, and even angry quarrels are not the assassins of love. Self-justification is." What assassinates relationship and love? Self-justification. Running away from consequences instead of embracing them. So what was the result when Onesimus put on the gospel lenses and stopped trying to justify himself? It enabled him to value something higher than his own freedom to do what he wanted to do and avoid consequences. He saw how true freedom is found in relationship, not in isolation, not in being his own person. And when he went back to Philemon, he created the opportunity for his relationship with Philemon to change from slave and master to brotherhood, from thief and victim to reconciliation. There were no guarantees it would work, but if he continued to live through the lens of doing his own thing and avoiding consequences, there was a guarantee that it would never, ever lead to brotherhood and reconciliation and love. Next week we'll talk about Philemon, but even though this letter, we don't see what happens when they read the letter, but history is pretty confident in reporting that they did reconcile. Philemon did forgive, and Onesimus forgave Philemon, and they became brothers in Christ. And Onesimus, putting on gospel lenses, is what enabled him to go and embrace these consequences, not knowing for sure what they would be, and create that opportunity. It helped him stop running away from consequences and stop justifying his behavior, but instead embrace the consequences as a way toward love. And those are two hard things to wrestle with today, I know. The idea to stop chasing after your own freedom to do what you want to do. It is so ingrained. And you do it in ways that you don't even recognize probably. I know I do. I've sat down and I've examined myself. How am I doing this? And like throughout the day, I'm like, that's me trying to just be free by getting away from others instead of serving. That's me trying to be free by avoiding consequences instead of embracing them. How would seeing life through the gospel change your view of the turbulence you're encountering right now? Do you find yourself running away to chase freedom? Do the lenses you're wearing make you think that doing whatever you want is the ultimate dream place to be? And let me remind you of what Jesus did. He was completely free. The only one who ever was truly capable and justified for doing whatever it is he wanted to do as the creator. But he didn't do what he wanted to do. He did what was best so there could be love between us and God. He wanted what was best. He surrendered in an ultimate way to death by our hands so that we could receive true ultimate freedom from his hands. How would that change your priorities in life if you began to see things the way Jesus saw them and sees them? If you stopped looking through the little porthole at the bending wings and looked at Jesus, the pilot, and trusted him, how would that change the way you're reacting to turbulence in your life? How would it change what you're chasing after if you were to see life through the gospel? What are you running away from? What are you running after today? As long as you're wearing this lens that freedom is doing what you want to do, you're going to be like this little girl who's afraid of her shadow. Look at her. That's so funny when it's a little kid, isn't it? But it's sad when you realize that's how you're living your life as an adult. Running away from consequences, running away in fear, running away chasing after freedom from things you can never run away from. Running away doesn't leave things behind. Have you learned that yet? Running away doesn't leave things behind. They're still with you, like a shadow. No, it takes some kind of confrontation to break free. Put on the gospel lens and see the truth. Running away doesn't leave behind your regrets and mistakes. In order to leave them behind, there's got to be a confrontation that resolves them and pays for them. Jesus took the brunt of that confrontation for you, for me, on the cross. He confronted all my regrets and mistakes, and he justified me and you. He paid the price for the sin that enslaves us so that we can have true freedom. Freedom is not a place to run after. It is a gift that only Jesus can give. You know you have it when you're able to serve others instead of being wrapped up, narcissistic, only thinking for yourself. Consequences aren't something to run away from. Jesus bore the brunt of them. They are something now to embrace as a pathway toward brotherhood and sisterhood and love. So if you've been chasing a distorted freedom this morning, I invite you to stop. Encourage you, stop. How has the distorted lens that freedom is doing what you want to do changed your life right now? How is it showing you? Think about that for a moment. Wrestle with that. How is it affecting your life? How is it affecting the way you treat others? Are you just unwilling to serve others? Or you do it, but you're begrudging, you're angry, you're bitter, you get lose patience? Or are you truly free to love others? Are you that passenger fighting for the best overhead spot to get your luggage in, fighting to get upgraded to first class, fighting to get the food service first, fighting for the armrest, putting your feet through the back of the chair in front of you so you can get your... Are you that passenger fighting for yourself because you're the only one that matters on the plane? Or are you getting up and serving because you're taking after your pilot? You know you've got freedom when you're not fighting for yourself, but you're fighting with Jesus for the world. You know you got freedom when that happens. And what consequences have you been running away from? Is there someone you've cheated or robbed or stolen from? Someone you've hurt? And you've been avoiding the consequences. You've been running away. You don't want to deal with it because it's just going to be messy and a problem. And look, there are no guarantees how things will turn out, except for if you do avoid the consequences, you will never have brotherhood or sisterhood with that person again. You will never have love in a relationship. It will be done. And that's horrible. That's death. But if you embrace what Jesus has done and recognize it, and you know he's taken the brunt of the consequences, that sets you free to go and work toward reconciliation. Offer yourself in sincerity. You don't need to justify yourself. Jesus will go with you. And maybe, just maybe, you'll find love and relationship where right now there is death and brokenness.